Well, greetings, friends, and welcome to the Gospel Underground Podcast. This is episode 158, Cultural Apologetics and Fault Lines. We are broadcasting live, well, live for us together here in the worldwide headquarters in Blacksburg, Virginia. I'm here with my main man, Jesse Fury.
It's good to be back in the headquarters.
That's right.
It's beautiful day out. Should be smoking meat today, really.
I could have done a chuck roast. I did a tomahawk steak for the first time ever this week. Oh, man. Those things cost way too much money, Jesse.
Yeah, they do. Did you order it?
I ordered it. Okay. Yeah, it was way expensive, but it was of a certain size. I think it was 2.7 pounds.
Ooh.
So we ate on it for a couple days. And, you know, I mean, I do like meat, but like eating pounds of meat is a little much even for me. So eat a little bit here, a little bit there. But it was more like a little roast on a stick.
Right.
Fun to cook. Really right. Fun to cook. And
you smoking anything for Easter weekend?
We're going to do the twice smoked ham. And by that, you know, you kind of, you know, ham comes already cured and smoked. Yep. Typically yep. When you buy ham, sometimes even sliced. So we're going to get one of those and I'll smoke it up to temperature and then I'm going to do like a brown sugar, hot honey bourbon glaze kind of thing. I think Ooh. So. Yeah.
Ooh, Let's go. That sounds good. I'm smoking. I think I'm just going to do some pulp pork.
Start in the
morning, go to church. You know, now at this point, like I don't have any Sunday morning responsibilities on Easter Sunday. So I'm just going to show up and worship with my family. And I might be hosting. I better figure that out.
you might want to know which one you're doing there. Yeah. It's, I tell you what, the first year out of pastoring for me was like really bizarre. Cause like when you're on the inside of local churches serving, you know, preaching, planning, you know, major Holy Week stuff, it's just so different. And all of a sudden, you know, you're not, it's kind of nice to be honest for a little bit. And then you miss certain things too. The thing I missed most then, and it was probably the most difficult thing. Some people say, well, I miss preaching or I miss counseling, whatever people liked the most, I guess, of pastoral ministry. What I missed is that my regularity of study, you know, when you're preaching week in and week out, when that disappears, you're like, okay, I got to rebuild devotional practices and rhythms a little bit because, you know, you're reading scripture and praying. And the way I used to do it is I'd be studying and writing sermons for the current series I am. And then I'd be in another book of the Bible just wandering in prayer for like maybe teaching it a year from now or something. And so, yeah, I had to figure that out again a little bit and pick up those books over there, like devotional stuff and like how to get rhythms. And I think for me, one of the most revelatory things for me, if you're a Christian listening to this, was the Daily Liturgy podcast. I love listening to the Bible every day. Now
You got me on that, man. Yeah, I've been since January, Jenny and I have been, in fact, this morning I was listening and then she came out and she was listening. So they were like dueling. Yeah. I was like, look, I'm turning mine off. You come in here. Let's have our coffee and listen together. So,
and here's the wild thing. Kayla, my oldest, is likely going to go to that church. Because she's taken a job in Omaha, Nebraska,
right.
Where, you know, the Daily Liturgy Project, but Corndale Church in Omaha,
for Nebraska, Christians everywhere.
For Christians everywhere. She's going to go from a Christian everywhere now to maybe perhaps
Omaha
being an Omaha Christian. Yeah. So super, super fun, man.
Well, that is a cultural artifact that they have created that has helped Christians everywhere.
That's right. That's right. In human beings, we do create things. We make ideas. We use art, technology. And today we're talking about
culture. See, that's a good segue right there.
You very artfully done, my brother. We are in this answers series, right? And we began with what we might call basic Christian doctrines. Like Christian doctrine is foundational. You have to have sound teaching from the scriptures centered in Jesus Christ as our foundation for our own spirituality and life, and as we look to communicate the gospel to others. As so, we need to be able to reasonably and articulately defend the faith or give a reason for the hope that we have and do so with gentleness and respect. That's 1 Peter 3:15 or 1 Peter, as my British friends would say. Mm-hmm. And then we need to know, this is another passage in the beginning of the book of Colossians chapter 4, how to answer each person, and that takes wisdom. But without the foundation, we can't just start engaging every cultural question and moment without having a solid Christian foundation. So that's why we began our answers series with why do we believe in God? Is the uniqueness of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus, the reliability of the Bible, right?
Yeah.
It gives testimony to him. We start there. Those, if you're being formal, that's Christian apologetics.
Yeah.
Right. But today we're going to move, Jesse, into what we would call cultural apologetics, which is a slightly different part of the discipline or field of apologetics. And certainly one is the most immediate in practice. If you've been listening for a while, we believe that you begin with mission and witness and then seek to give answers to the questions people actually have rather than just, you know, doing intellectual jousting on the YouTube.
So yeah, that's right. I mean, like in a lot of ways, Reed, you are a master of apologetics.
I'm pretty sure I have a master's degree in
apologetics, right? Yeah. So generally this is like wheelhouse stuff for you, but in a lot of ways, cultural apologetics is this podcast. It's kind of the overall category.
The whole
of what
purpose
we're doing.
Of this podcast. Yeah. We're a dialogue in the borderlands between the church and culture.
Yeah.
So there are always things, right? Christianity doesn't exist as an inert bubble by itself apart from the world.
Right,
God placed his people in this world. In fact, God came into the world, right?
Yeah.
The incarnation. He has a body now that exists in time, geotemporally, spatially located, as my friend Dr. Allison wrote in his book. We exist somewhere, right? Or as my friend Doug Logan says, we are on the block.
Mm-hmm.
We live here. We live in Blacksburg. We live in a university, multiple university towns in our area. So people exist in culture, and we're trying to share the gospel and thoughtfully engage with people in culture. So to say that, though, Jesse, I want you to lead us a bit for what do we mean when we're saying, just in a broad sense, culture? Because that word gets thrown around quite a bit.
Yeah, that's good. So I teach a class on this through Southeastern and the Bonhoeffer House on theology and culture. And for that class, I wrote something called What is Culture? Posted up on the Bonhoeffer House
website. We'll put a link in the show notes.
And there in that paper, here, I'll just read from it. Sociologist Clifford Geertz describe culture this way: man is an animal suspended in webs of significance he himself has spun. I take culture to be those webs. So I like that to a certain degree. You know, we're sort of suspended. So we're here, and then we're in the middle of something.
That's right.
So I go on to say culture is made of the webs of significance and the meaning that holds us up. But it's more than just the webs. It's also making and cultivating goods, artifacts that form the webs themselves, people, goods, meaning. And then I do a little riff on, I like this. So Andy Crouch has a definition of culture, how we make sense of the world as we make something of the world. And I just added people to that because I think what Crouch is interested in his book, Culture Making, is he's really interested in helping Christian artists be inspired to make Christian artifacts that kind of go into the world.
That's right.
But I think backing out to say, well, people, we exist in groups. We exist in, you know, we're encultured in people and ethnic cultures and family dynamics and friend groups and tribes. We have people, and then sense and something, right? So
yeah.
I like to break it down even more simply. We're talking about stuff and stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like we make stuff and then we tell stories. We make sense of how we are, where we fit. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Who am I? How do I be a good guy?
That's right. That's
where did
right.
I come from?
Yeah. What is good, right, and true and beautiful?
Yeah.
And now here is where I think the world suffers. We now have bought into these ideas, and some would run this under deconstructionism or postmodernity, that all these little stories and stuff are just stories and stuff. There is no view to truth, goodness, and beauty that doesn't just come from human beings. So as such, by definition, it all must be culturally relative. Now, the problem happens when all these little culture bubbles, where are the borders to these things? We don't know. There are borderlands, and they start to rub into each other.
Yeah.
And we do have different definitions of what is true and good and beautiful. And unfortunately for the postmodernists, people don't just sit in cafes or wine bars and discuss these things and get upset. They go to war over this stuff, right? And so the idea that there is no objective, right? We're just caught in webs of meaning or belief. There is no view from somewhere other than our own, locks us in this, I would say, never ending spiral downward of just debating stuff that really has no truth or meaning beyond what we say.
Yeah.
And so we just yell at each other. The Christian gospel has this audacious claim that God came into all or somewhere in people, place, time, and space, in a place with stories and stuff, and gave it all meaning and brings us the truth, revelation. We talked about that, and speaks to us, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but a materialistic conception of the universe, or just that we're all space, time, and energy, stuff, and then stories that came from just the stuff, right? Then we're lost, man. We're truly, truly lost. I love this book. This is by a skeptical guy named Thomas Nagel. It's called Minded Cosmos. He said, why the materialist neo-Darwinian conception of nature is almost certainly false. False. And really wrestling with, hey, is there purpose, design, meaning in this world that comes from somewhere outside of the world is the biggest question we can have. But most Christians, Jesse, aren't thinking about culture. They're just thinking about whether Trump or Biden is good or whether their church
Trump
is good.
Trump also says one Peter, I think.
One no comment, Jesse. I almost had to edit myself out on the podcast.
Just keep going, right? Yeah, we're thinking about culture without knowing that we're thinking
about
culture.
That's right. We're living in culture and creating it and not knowing what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so there is a sense to being awake, awake, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you, that we do live in a world where there is stuff and stories. People are selling us stuff. People are selling stories. Marketing is a combination of both.
Yeah.
Good marketing today is a good story, even a good community, right? A good, give your life meaning because I got a nice smoker. So what are we to do as people who believe in Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life, and we're seeking to bring about the repentance of faith for the sake of the nations. We want to see people become followers of King Jesus. And then when we do so, we will run into all sorts of cultural beliefs, things that people hold passionately, other religions, right? And so what emerges is the necessity of cultural apologetics. Or a dialogue in the borderlands between the church and whatever culture you're having. So I want to give an analogy, Jesse, of a river here. This is some of my friends at the Rivendell Institute of Christian Thought and Learning at Yale. These are guys that all have credentialed academic degrees and are seeking to influence what you would say, quote, upstream.
Yeah.
And so the analogy from a river goes like this, is like if you could imagine, now I've embellished on what those guys said. They're like, hey, well, we see all this crap in the water of the river. We should go see where it came from. And their view was like, let's go upstream to the academy.
Right.
Where the thought makers are making the stuff and influence there. I've expanded it into a full river analogy that living in culture is quite like a day spent down at the river, right? There are a lot of things happening. There's a lot of people there. There's stuff moving around. The weather is changing, right? There's different things floating by in the water. Some of those might be like a cooler full of, you know, Bud Light or something. It's a cultural artifact. There might be trash, right, in the river. There might be dead bodies. You don't know, right, Jesse? There are different people contributing to the stuff and the stories going on around the river. And so there is a reality of engagement culturally that can be both downstream and upstream. And so downstream, Jesse, what do you think I'm getting at there?
Yeah, like you're engaging with the things as they're coming to you in your particular place, right? You don't need to go and you don't have to go and try to influence people at Harvard to be able to have a conversation with your neighbor about the Dune 2 movie that came out.
That's
and like,
right.
What do you think about dark messiah figures? You know,
right.
Like, you know, that's a downstream. You don't have to go into Hollywood and try to influence the influencers that are way upstream and in the entertainment media to just talk to your neighbor.
Yes. Yes.
About sports or,
in the things that people love and value and the stuff and stories that are defining their life, right? Downstream cultural apologetics is the place in the river where we're sitting.
Yeah.
Right? There's stuff coming to us, right? You could watch Three Body Problem on Netflix, a new sci-fi show, Jesse.
I haven't seen that.
I watched way too much of it last night. it's about physics and AI and all this kind of stuff. You don't have to know the many worlds theories of quantum mechanics, or you don't have to understand what
good
is quantum entanglement to see that stuff used in the show, because the show is a story in itself using these things that are produced by academics or theoretical physicists, but it's kind of hitting us. Social media, influencer, podcast, television, media, art, high or low, downstream is where we are. Upstream, though, that there is a cultural apologetics that does happen upstream. That's where the cultural shapers, I've added the cultural destroyers, and the catalyst, the ideas that are both assumed and created amongst intellectuals and agencies. And if you want to use a microcosm of our society, we'll talk about this in coming episodes. When people use the word woke today, right? Everyone goes to war, right? But what's going on there is a downstream issue where people are talking about how identity politics is used or misused or used for justice or injustice, whatever. But they're interacting from upstream ideas that came forth in the academy decades ago,
right?
Even out of the epistemological view of the philosophers, right? And the deconstructionists who then were imported into kind of legal theory and policy. And so sometimes people aren't even talking about that, but that stuff matters. Somebody needs to engage upstream. We certainly need to engage presently downstream. Now, I don't want to get into the ancient philosophical arguments that began with the Greeks of whether you can stand in the same river more than once. This is kind of one of those intellectual puzzles. Like, people actually got into debates about this in ancient Greece, because the river is always changing.
It's not the same river.
Yeah. Kind of, in one sense it is, one sense it is. I want to get into that. But because we live in a cultural river, we do experience things directly ourselves. And then sometimes we need to pause and think, well, why do people believe that? Where did that come from? And understanding kind of the origins of things and ideas can help us learn, right? As we Asseldar, monk, share, listen, deconstruct or disrupt.
Disrupt.
Yeah. Give good answers. Repeat. Yeah. As we live this way, we want to be seeking to be effective, right? And giving an answer for the reason we have to this person, answering this person and their questions. Now, one of my friends, when I took a summer project back in the day as a staff person with Athletes in Action, with the Rivendell Institute for Christian Thought and Learning at Yale, one of the guys who I don't think is with them anymore, but still doing similar work, was a guy named Dave Mahan. And Dave, I think he got his PhD in like Renaissance poetry or some English or something. He was into communication and things. And so he gave this metaphor that I've shared on the podcast before of cultural fault lines. Mm-hmm. In other words, that in different cultural settings, right, there are different fault lines with the ideas and truths of the gospel that kind of cause the earthquakes with a particular culture. For example, if you were kind of in a polygamist culture that had multiple wives and you're bringing the good news of Jesus there, all the issue of marriage to multiple people would be kind of a clash with like biblical teaching, right?
Marriage, family.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. You and I probably aren't engaging with polygamists.
I don't do a lot of polygamy evangelism.
You might run into some polyandrists maybe in Radford. Yeah. I don't know, but, swingers or something, but, different cultural moments have different cultural things. And so we have to say, what are important cultural issues that we should be wary of, aware of, and then thoughtful of so that we might be able to speak to people well in our time. And Dr. Mahan gave this, I'll put a graphic up on your screen. If you're using a podcast app on your phone, look at your screen, where he kind of drew out this idea, some of the major meta idea, high level ideas in our culture, like authority, who's in charge of you, right? Yep. We have a very autonomous, atomistic, individualistic kind of view. I'm in charge of me, nobody else. Anybody else is trying to be in charge of me is an abuser, even, or bad, or terrible, right? And of course, that's one of the things in our culture. There are people that abuse power and abuse authority. But what does it mean for a culture that's suspicious of all authority to say that God is ultimately, we should obey him. He's Lord. Mm. His word is the authority over my life. That there's going to be a little earthquake perhaps when we share that. Or our idea of freedom. You know, some people like, what's the most important thing? American freedom, right? Like, well, what if we're called to be yoked up to Jesus and to follow him? Which causes us to love, if we're called to love people. Love is self-limiting of our freedom at times because we just don't do whatever we want in the world. We're called to love God and love our neighbors. Or what is the nature of truth, right? Jesse, or even our cultural view of the future. What do you think today when we see, even films, TV shows about the distant future? What are those usually like?
Yeah, dystopian right now. I mean, so you've got, it's so interesting with the future because the dystopian thing that's happening now where you get a lot of like, zombie apocalypse movies or,
our robot overlords.
AI robot overlords, it's interesting because it almost feels like there has been such a investment from a heart level culturally in the idea of progress. We are just going to sail into utopia.
Yeah.
And things have happened have caused our cultural moment to go, wait a minute, this utopia.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to go backwards.
Yeah.
Or we're going, however you interpret it,
If we lived in the 19th century, right, or maybe 18th century even, you would think that science and reason and enlightenment were going to lead us up the mountain, so to speak.
1930s.
Yeah, and there were even Christian versions of this, right?
Teens, yeah.
And then the very thing, science, technology, progress, reason, all that turned into mustard gas, machine guns.
Yeah, atom bombs
and nanobots killing everyone, gray goo. I mean, like now we think, the future maybe isn't progress, but it's judgment for our own pride and hubris. And now you really do have movements of people. Obviously, there's extreme versions of this. Environmentalists who want to blow up the world to return it to the Stone Age, literally, right? Where, off the grid, let's get rid of grids, right? You have this idea like, let's all just grow our food in our yard. Yeah. And if you return to a state of nature, that's probably better because, I don't know, it's better, but it, that's a view, right? And so even when you think of the Christian view of the future, which includes heaven, glory, and judgment, right?
And even right now, you see in our particular moment, the resurgence or surge of Christian nationalism, and a lot of this is an investment in, what do I think the future should look like?
That's
and,
right.
And what part should I play culturally as a Christian in bringing a desired future into existence.
That's right. That's right.
Which, anyway, there's a lot.
There's a lot we could talk about there because even like I think we've probably done this in other podcasts where we talked about the relationship of the church, the culture.
Yep.
That is a reemergence of, of dominion, right? Of Christ over culture. I don't know why. I think it's probably from my own biography that, my father is an atheist agnostic kind of guy. And so I always felt like Christianity was very countercultural, subversive to main narratives of power. And I see it best situated as kind of a ragtag grassroots group of missionaries who are not afraid of the man. That's the way I view Christianity. So like, I don't want to take over the government. Like I want to subvert it through the gospel, right? That's just but again, should we have just and good laws? Yes. Should that align with what Jesus teaches? Well, we probably would say yes. Should you be involved in politics? Then you have all these tensions, right?
Yeah.
Where how much is too much? And what about pluralism? And how do we live together peaceably for the good of all people rather than just, my tribe of people? And it becomes very complex. These are cultural moments. That's why we're going to talk about
church fault lines.
Political. It's a fault line. And then finally, I think probably the biggest fault line that Dr. Mahan identified that I agree with and I think has just gotten more acute since I took this project with them 20 years ago is the idea of identity and the self, who I am. And the scripture says that we're created delightfully good in the image of God, tragically fallen and wicked and sinful, and that we're under the right, just wrath of God, right? Man, that's not what they teach kids in kindergarten. We're in the middle school. And now we have all these things that are related to identity and self, from, you know, all the sexuality stuff, sexual identification, as well as how we view race and racism, or even myself as a person, infleshed person, yeah, with a certain melanin level or not in your skin, which is not precisely the way that God would see people.
Or a certain, you know, do your gametes determine your sexed nature, or does your, you know, your deeply held view of yourself, like, you know,
yeah, your
not
inner
just race,
picture of,
yeah,
yourself,
sex, yes, gender.
It's wild how we're going to talk, we'll do an episode on that. We may do multiple still on that, gender and sexuality.
Yeah.
But it's wild how, if someone is purely a material, space, time, energy is all there is, you don't have a soul. You're just a body. But yet the imaginations of the brain about your body or yourself, whatever that is, which is just your body in that view, somehow trumps
your body.
The only thing that is.
Right.
It's unless you believe in,
we might have to do more than one episode,
God or souls, you just are a mess on this stuff, yeah, right? Which leads to the body becoming a mess, even being butchered. And so, yeah, we're going to head into that towards the end. So here, because these issues of truth, authority, freedom, future, identity, and self, these are the main kind of big level, meta level issues. Those things work themselves downstream into things like politics, right? So we're going to do an episode on why, you know, again, we're trying to give good answers to people we're sharing the gospel, yeah, with. We're not just trying to do idea speak here.
Yeah.
So if I'm sharing with someone who says, why is the church so political? Why do all, I don't know, evangelicals vote for, you know, Donald Trump, who's an, you know, immoral man? Why is the church captured by leftist politics? Because there's the Christian left, the Christian right, right? What do we say to people, yeah, about that? So we're going to do a whole episode on that. Not on politics, but how we look at answering, why is the church, mm-hmm, so political? Racism, Christianity, how do we see both the beautiful history related to Christianity and race and the wicked history?
Yeah.
Because they're both there, right? Environmental concerns, Jesse. When somebody asks you, hey, Christianity caused the rape of the environment. What do we think about that? What do you think about climate change or creation care stewardship? How do we see that as Christians? Mm-hmm. And then how would we even share the good news with someone,
yeah,
through environmental concerns? Other interstellar planetary beings, maybe from, yeah, the three-bodied, three-sunned universe or three-sunned galaxy, solar system.
Is this the show? I'm going to have to go watch it now.
This is the show, The Three-Body Problem.
Yeah, like, so, what's the Christian view of aliens? What if there are aliens out there? What does mean to, right, you know, your Christian, right, worldview and how you share the gospel?
That's,
or
right,
how do you share your gospel with your neighbor that's asking you those,
yes,
questions?
And, yeah, I've been asked about aliens a lot. I mean, for some reason, this is a big one now. This isn't in our notes or plans, but we should do something again. We did it like maybe our second podcast episode ever on technology.
Yeah.
And the advances of AI and the magic,
yeah, I think AI,
magic of that.
We should do one.
We should do that again. So we'll do that in this series as well.
We just added one.
Simulationism, right?
Yeah.
A lot of smart people, you know, think there's maybe a glitch in the Matrix, and, you know, got books like this book here, Donald Hoffman's book, The Case Against Reality, Why Evolution Hid the Truth from Our Eyes. So his view is called conscious realism, that everything is mind and we're kind of living in an operating system or something. And we see glitches in the matrix. So we kind of know that materialism isn't it, that all things are kind of mental. Of course, there are major worldviews that believe that historically. So maybe we'll do some of that. Because for me, Jesse, I'm convinced that simulationism is not incompatible with Christianity at all. In fact, there was a student who's a data analytics guy at Brown on the wrestling team. If he's listening, he knows we were talking about this in the lobby before a meeting, simulationalism. And I said, look, if someone believes, think about it for a second. If someone believes that a super intelligence made a world and we're kind of characters in it, playing it out, I was like, why don't you just believe God created the universe, man? It's like, come on.
You know, we have a story about
yes,
that.
Yes, we have a story about that. You know, we're in it. It's called creation, right? And that's very, even it, you know, even if God is the creator of this world, right? Other worlds, I don't know, right? Other universe. We'll do something on that, technology, AI, simulationalism. And then finally, sex and gender. What's the deal? Why do we care about people love? It's just sex. You don't understand the new sciences of sex and gender, Jesse. You should understand that gospel, because that is a good news somehow being pitched to the world that it's very bad. And by God's grace, I think people are starting to see through that one a little bit. So that's where we're headed. Cultural.
Love it.
Apologetics. Any final thoughts as we wrap up this short cultural apologetics introduction episode?
No, Reed, other than just I'm excited about this one, and I think, you know, particularly for you, the kind of overlap of being able to talk to your neighbor. I'll put it this way: we're not upstream guys.
That's right. We're not working as professors.
We're not going to be professors in the Ivy League. We're not in the boardrooms, you know, in the big ad agencies. Frankly, most of our listeners aren't either. Yeah, so I like where we're going here. On the block, how do we have these conversations? I'm excited about it.
Jesse, you just gave us the word of the day. You may not be in the borderlands, in the boardroom, but we're certainly in the borderlands between the church and culture. The Gospel Underground podcast is produced in partnership with the Bonhoeffer House. Review us on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. I think we're everywhere podcasts are served. 5 stars are acceptable. Send your comments, feedback to us. Hey, questions you want us to take up here on the podcast. We do that from time to time. Listen to our audience. We are dialogue taking place in the borderlands between the church and culture. Whether you serve in the academy, whether you're in the boardroom, whether you're rolling with toddlers today.
That's right.
You're engaged in the mission of God, and we hope to see you out there.
Peace.
Peace.